Like everybody else in America, I really loved Stranger Things when it came out. That was one of the first shows that kind of really made Netflix like, oh, you gotta have Netflix. I remember they started out with House of Cards, which I loved, of course, because it's about politics and has great acting and great writing. And then Stranger Things kind of did the same thing, but for, you know, a less wonky political crowd. And I've really enjoyed watching the show kind of expand over the years. But I'm kind of skeptical about what Stranger Things is doing now. And honestly, I haven't seen a single frame of the latest season. I don't know what the plot points is. I don't know, are the kids supposed to be younger than they really are? Because these actors are like, they got to be like 25 years old by now. Millie Bobby Brown and Gaten Matanzaro, whatever his name is. And so I don't know. I'm just curious. Has anyone seen the new season of Stranger Things and wants to call me and tell me if I should watch it or not? No spoilers, but I'm pledging to watch less meaningless television in 2026. 2025 was a banner year for meaningless television. No regrets, but I'm trying to correct course here a little bit. So let me know if Stranger Things was any good or not. It also begs the question about Predator Badlands. We didn't really talk about Predator Badlands. I was hoping that we would get a chance to do that, but you know, the holidays are here and it kind of got all away. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Predator Badlands is the new Predator movie, right? Like we all remember Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny Glover. There was all the whole Predator franchise. They did Alien versus Predator, which we don't talk about. But Predator Badlands is supposed to be pretty badass because for the first time in the franchise history, it made Predator the main character. It wasn't, you know, some human versus the Predator alien. The movie was about the Predator and his journey and what you know, his pursuit of happiness. But I kind of forgot about it when, you know, Thanksgiving, then suddenly you bring twice and it's Christmas and it's New Year's. And now I don't even think it's in theaters anymore. Did you see that?
Yes, I would have to say I was skeptical when I saw the trailer because I am a Predator. Predator 2 is one of my favorite movies, and it was better than I expected. No, without spoiling anything, it was a lot better than I expected. I thought, because here's my thing. Every other Predator movie, the Predator doesn't fare well against humans. So I'm thinking, well, why would we follow this guy on his journey knowing how he's going to end up? But it's a lot better than I expected it to be. It shows you a lot about the Yautja culture, and it was pretty good.
I'm so pleased to hear that and to know that at the same time that Alien Earth on FX was so good. I think maybe we've kind of cracked the code right in time because it seems like the old franchises is all we're ever going to get anymore. The Marvel, the Alien, the Predator, the Harry Potter, Star Wars. It's just all going to be the same thing, just recycled over and over again. So if you're going to keep giving me Alien and Predator movies, give a damn, you know? And I'm glad to know that Badlands was good. Alien Earth was great. Good. There's a future worth living here. You were going to say something else?
No, I thought I was just waiting on you to give me the cue to...
Oh, I'm out here gesticulating wildly, and you think I'm giving you the cue.
No, I was waiting on it, because you usually say it. But if you're going to, I'm going to follow your lead and not make any assumptions.
Coleman, light it up. It's your final news bomb for the week. The first day on the air of 2026, and we're going to start out right here. Damn, Donald, back at it again. Trump is trading threats with Iranian officials on social media after the president said that he would come to the aid of people who are protesting the Iranian regime.
As economic protests spread across parts of Iran, President Donald Trump writes on his Truth Social platform that if Iran violently kills peaceful protesters, the U.S., quote, will come to their rescue, end quote. Trump writes, "We are locked and loaded and ready to go. At least 7 people have been killed in violence surrounding the demonstrations." Ali Larijani, who's the secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, responded on social platform X, saying, "Trump should know that intervention by the U.S. in the domestic problem corresponds to chaos in the entire region and the destruction of the U.S. interests, and he accuses the U.S. and Israel of stoking the demonstrations." And Larijani says, "The people of the U.S. should know that Trump began the adventurism. They should take care of their own soldiers." I'm Donna Warder.
This is a feel bad story disguised as a feel good story. Let me explain what I mean. I am broadly supportive of the Iranian people and their pursuit of fair representation, freedom of expression, etc. They want the same things we want, but they have a much more narrow path to getting it because they're run by a bunch of theocratic maniacs. So I'm supportive of them. If they're protesting, I hope they get what they want, and I hope that tens of thousands of them aren't killed or disappeared like they were during the Green Revolution and the Arab Spring. So Trump coming out and saying that he supports their efforts and he's willing to protect them is great. I mean, that makes me feel good. I'm glad. Good job, President Trump. Then, you know, as usual, you kind of got to catch your breath and zoom out and remember some of his actions in this vein in the past. What makes Trump's sudden concern for these protesters ring hollow is how utterly selective it is. I'm old enough to remember when millions and millions of people marched peacefully in Hong Kong during the umbrella movement protests. Remember that? Everyone had the little umbrellas. It was one of the largest and most sustained civil protest movements in recent history. When people in Hong Kong were standing up against the Chinese Communist Party in support of their own right to self-rule and self-governance, Trump praised Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader, and he stayed completely quiet about the umbrella movement. And he did that to protect a trade deal. In Russia, when Russians protested corruption, repression, when Vladimir Putin threw his main opponent, Alexei Navalny, in jail, sent him to Siberia to die in a jail cell, Trump did nothing. He just said, you know, that's Putin, that's Russia, they can do what we want, we're not going to get involved. Saudi Arabia, Egypt have also recently been the site of mass civil rights protests, which were violently crushed in both of those countries. And Trump called their leaders friends. I think he called the guy in Egypt like my favorite dictator. And he kept the weapons flowing to those countries so they could more easily suppress their own people. But now, hey, now it's Iran, a longtime adversary, and suddenly we're locked and loaded to get out there and rescue those protesters. Okay. That mismatch tells you that this is not about protecting the peaceful demonstrators. It's about when protest rhetoric is politically useful to the president. And those protesters in Iran will probably pay the price for that kind of fake solidarity. Because the Iranian government's favorite thing to do every time this happens is to say everything that is wrong in Iran is America's fault. It is foreign interference. That's the reason you're miserable. That's the reason your currency is collapsing. That's the reason the economy's in the dumps. And they'll continue to rattle their little sabers and threaten everybody in the region, U.S. bases, soldiers, everyone within missile range. So effectively, what we have here is not actual foreign policy. It's just two old men yelling at each other online, which somehow manages to be both geopolitics and the worst Facebook thread you've ever seen. 40 people are dead and more than 100 people are injured in Switzerland.
In Switzerland, investigators think they know what started a deadly fire at a ski resort. The belief is sparkling candles on top of champagne bottles set off the fire at the busy La Constellation Bar at the Crans Montana Resort when they came too close to the ceiling. About 40 people were killed. This man, Oscar, got out.
People were banging on the windows because it's like a winter garden. I don't know if you call it like this in English. It's like a semi-outside spot, but still with windows. everyone was banging on the windows and stuff, screaming. It was like a horror movie, but they couldn't get out. I think the windows were too thick.
The candles give off a stream of upward shooting sparks. The resort is in a small town. This man lives there.
I think it's a reminder to all of us to always appreciate life, because it can happen even in Crans-Montana.
Mourners have been leaving candles and flowers at an impromptu memorial near the bar. I'm Ed Donahue.
It's so hard to hear this story and not immediately think about other nightclub fires. And I don't know why I'm like this. This is a weird thing that I get fascinated by. You know, some people are really into true crime podcasts or unsolved mysteries or whatever. When I hear about a fire at a theater or a nightclub, I have to know everything about it. I don't know why. It's a compulsion that I have. So I hear about what happened in Switzerland, and I'm kind of filing it against what I know about other big nightclub fires, like the Great White concert in Rhode Island. You probably remember that. The Upstairs Lounge fire, just a handful of blocks from where I'm sitting right now in the French Quarter. The way that those people died is so horrific. The music is loud. You're in a packed room. Suddenly there's smoke everywhere. The lights go out. You don't know where the exit is. Everyone is pushing and shoving and panicking and coughing and stamping all over each other to try to get out. And they think what happened in this Switzerland bar, nightclub, is a flashover. And a flashover is when heat like builds up at the top of the ceiling, and everything gets superheated, and then it all catches on fire all at once. So it's not like a regular fire, you know, like if you set up, I don't know, if you got a big pile of wood in your backyard and you set it on fire at one end, and it slowly goes from one end to the other, right? It's kind of like you can see the fire moving in sequence. That's not what happened here. This is not just the original flame moving from spot to spot. This is the air, the furniture, the walls, everything lights up all at once. And once a flashover happens, survival inside that space is basically impossible. I'm kind of surprised that there aren't more deaths as a result of this incident. More people may die. There's, you know, 100 and some that are still injured. God bless them. Happy dry January to all who celebrate.
He was triple-fisted, but it's not what you think.
Coffee and orange juice and cranberry.
Those are on the virgin side.
Yes.
Because he, like millions of others, is giving dry January a run.
Probably, hopefully, I can stick with it the whole year.
To slow down from the holiday season, prioritize health, which is why a damp January has become more popular, reducing the amount we drink rather than total sobriety.
I think it's a good goal, but I think that a lot of people fall off of it. Better to try than not try at all.
Chris Fama for CBS News Boston.
This is my 15th dry January in a row, and I have become exceedingly efficient at it. I find every January, not so much that I'm getting better sleep or I have fewer headaches or I have more energy. It's really illuminating how much of your routine ends up being built around drinking without you even thinking about it. It's not a conscious decision. It's not something that you set out to achieve for yourself. It just sort of happens. There's the, I'll just have one drink. Or there's the, oh, well, I'm going out, I don't need a drink, but everyone else is drinking and I want to fit in, so I'll have a drink. There's the roadie. You know, it's like if you're walking or, you know, not driving, certainly, but I'll take a beer to go, take a drink to go. We do that in New Orleans all the time. The Saints game is already over, but why wouldn't I have one more beer? It's that third glass of wine before bed. You probably didn't set out thinking, I'm going to drink three glasses of wine tonight. I'll have one with dinner. Maybe I'll have one after dinner. Then that third one just kind of sneaks in there. That's what I mean. It's like it kind of creeps into your life in ways that you don't notice or think about until you take it away for a month and you suddenly realize how loud everything else is when you don't have that creep coming into your life. It's your energy. It's your mood. It's your creative output, it's your relationships, and all that is good for the most part, that those things get louder and give you a chance to kind of reconnect with what's most important. The other thing I really like about dry January is that I don't have to achieve anything. I don't have to do anything. I'm not going to win at dry January. The whole point is the learning. You learn something. That's the goal. Maybe you feel great. Maybe you're counting the days. But either way, you come out knowing a little bit more about your relationship with alcohol. And that alone is kind of the point. New Year's Eve could have been a nightmare for shoppers in Charlotte, North Carolina.
The FBI says it has disrupted a plot to attack a North Carolina grocery store in the Charlotte area on New Year's Eve. U.S. Attorney Russ Ferguson described it as an attempted terrorist attack. Arrested was 18-year-old Christian Sturdivant, who he says had been reading ISIS material and made TikTok videos.
And eventually reached out to what he thought was a member of ISIS. In reality, was an undercover agent with NYPD in New York. He pledged his allegiance to ISIS with that undercover agent, and he disclosed his plans to, quote, do jihad soon.
Ferguson says Sturdivant talked about his plans.
About what means he would use to kill innocent people. He said he was going to wear a Kevlar vest and attack people with knives and hammers. And, of course, he talked about when he was going to carry out this attack, which was New Year's Eve.
He was arrested Wednesday. Sturdivant is being held after an initial court appearance. I'm Ed Donahue.
It's crazy the degree to which I think we have already kind of moved on from the fact that just like 2 weeks ago, there was a foiled terror plot that like was supposed to take place in California, but also New Orleans. Remember that guy? I think he was from Lafayette, or he was on his way here from Lafayette when they pulled him over. This is the pattern that we keep seeing. It's these very young guys who are extremely online, black-pilled. If you remember the conversation I had with Ellie Reeve earlier this year, and they are just so convinced that the world is broken and that violent action is the only way to matter to anyone. A terrorist group like ISIS, they don't even really have to do much to recruit people anymore. They just sit there and offer themselves as an identity that you too can latch onto if you're angry enough. On the prevention side, there is something that we can all do, and it's mostly boring human stuff. If there's young people in your life, there's young people in your family, you know, pay attention to them and keep them anchored in the real world. Not online, not on social media, not on Discord, not on Twitch. Make sure you are participating with them in real routines, real responsibilities. Make sure that you know that you view them as real people and you expect them to show up. You pay attention to any sudden withdrawal, any nonstop doom talk. Ask them what they're watching. What are you listening to? How are you actually feeling? It's not an interrogation. Don't mock them for what their answer is. Listen and encourage things that undermine the algorithm. Gainful employment, sports, team activities, art, volunteering, make something, be needed somewhere. Again, you're not trying to police their thoughts. You're just trying to make sure the internet isn't the only place that they feel seen or significant. Sounds like Smokey Bear. You too can stop terrorist attacks just by being a good person who gives a damn. We'll come back with more of your calls and text on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. If you want to react to anything you just heard in the news bomb, or, hey, what the hell, it's Friday, so give me whatever you got. I'm Ian Hokin for Scoot. I'll be right back after this. Stick around. On the text line, here's a text that says, the old MGM Grand in Las Vegas caught fire in the 80s in the same way a pastry fridge caught fire, and it burned so hot that the entire casino was engulfed in 6 minutes. Everything on the casino floor caught fire, and some of the hotel too. That hotel is now the Horseshoe Las Vegas. Yeah, I remember reading about that. April from Tikvah says, you really have to be an 80s teen to get Stranger Things. Overall, it was great. I was kind of too young to be an 80s teen, but I was around teens in the 80s, and I think I get it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed Stranger Things. Here's a text that says, don't watch the new Stranger Things. I was a huge fan, but then it turned woke. There was almost a whole episode where one of the characters...
Whoa, hold on now. Wait, that text about the going...
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a spoiler, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I shouldn't say it.
Yeah, don't... Yeah.
All right, well, somebody comes out And apparently,
yeah, blah, 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 blah,
it
blah,
didn't
blah.
Fit with the theme of the show. And look, I might surprise some people here, because you know how I feel about this. It is true that some of these things feel a little too shoehorned, which doesn't make me want to turn it off, doesn't make me angry, doesn't make me want to support queer people. But if you're doing this in a way that it's so egregious and obvious that it turns people away, like that's not, you've missed the entire point of including storylines like that. Like there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And I don't know, I'll reserve judgment until I see Stranger Things, but it sounds like they kind of did it the wrong way. So listen, we were that one of those commercials that we just played, right?
Yeah.
You got that queued up?
Yeah, I got it.
Now, this might be kind of inside baseball, but there's a weird little sound effect in there that is firing neurons in my brain that tell me I'm playing Sonic the Hedgehog on Genesis. And I wonder, and Coleman, you hear it too. I know you heard it. Mm-hmm. All right, play the commercial, and we'll talk about it.
I believe this is it. Let's see.
Yeah, turn it down a little. That!
I heard it.
What is that?
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
All right, that one's on us, Lamarck. But I swear to God, that little, that sort of shimmer sound.
Yes.
That's like what when Sonic finishes a level.
Yeah, so you're thinking about when he hits that little, the check mark, and it goes.
Yeah, like the halfway point,
the
right?
The halfway point.
Yeah.
Now, this is why it's cool to have 80s teen friends. That original sound effect comes from the very beginning of Ghostbusters when they're going through
the library.
Library, and you hear that boom, you hear like that same sound effect that they use. That's Ghostbusters 1984.
Whoa. Hey, do you think that Lamarck knows that? Is this some sort
I'm
of
not sure.
Are they doing like what's the movie? The guy that's like Obey Among Us or something?
Oh, They Live.
Yeah, They Live.
Roddy
Piper. It's like Roddy Piper. Thank you. It's subliminal messaging. They're hitting us with video game sound effects and Ghostbusters sound effects from our childhood to make us buy their product.
I am a nostalgia junkie, so it may work on me.
I'm going out to Lamarck right after this. Hey, man, shoot me some calls, shoot me some texts. We do have somebody to talk to at 3:25 here. His name's Henry Young. We're going to talk about viral nicknames and who decides when a nickname actually sticks, whether that's the brand or that's the consumers, the people, you know, purchasing the brand's products. Think about how Kleenex means like whatever brand of tissue in a little box. It might be Walmart brand, it might be Great Value this, it might be whatever, but we just say Kleenex and everybody knows what that means, right? Kleenex just means tissue paper, no matter who manufactured it. We just call it Kleenex. Same thing with Band-Aids, like the little adhesive antiseptic thing that you put on a cut. It's a Band-Aid. It doesn't matter who made it or if that's what it actually says on the box. If someone says, give me a Band-Aid, you know what they're talking about.
Pampers.
I don't even know another diaper brand. Maybe someday I will if I become a father. But for now, I'm just like, yeah, give me some Pampers. And I know that means diapers. Okay, so that's coming up at 3:25. We're going to talk to Henry Young. He's a founder and CEO of Avari Research. I did want to share something with you a little bit. I've got this kind of rattling around in my head because of something I read last night. I'm practically a ghost on social media. I mean, I have a Facebook account. I have a Twitter account. They're both kind of locked up. I never use them. I never respond to people on there. I never follow anybody. It's been years. And for somebody who is in this field in 2026, that seems a little bit incongruous, right? Like if you want to grow an audience, if you want to influence people, you got to be online. People ask me, are you taking a break? Maybe you should be more active in social media. Maybe you should start your own podcast. And to that, I say, I'm not offline. I'm on the radio at WWL, one of the biggest, most important, influential, treasured radio stations in the country. And when I turn this microphone on, people actually hear me. And I don't mean like the algorithm decided to test this out with a small group before they decided what to do with it. I mean real humans, my neighbors, in your cars, kitchens, hospitals, job sites, offshore, in traffic, all over Southeast Louisiana and the Gulf Coast, you're all hearing the same thing at the same time. The radio is either on or it's off. Your car radio does not try to make the decision for you about what it thinks you want to listen to today. And that difference is so important. And we don't think about that much anymore, and I think that we should. One of the most useful things that I read recently that kind of started me thinking about this, put language to something that I already felt and thought about, which is that social media, we talk about it like, hey, it's the public square. Social media does not at all function like a public square. It functions like the media, editorial media, mainstream media. It has filters, it has priorities, it has profit incentives, except that that process is completely automated. It is invisible, and it is completely unaccountable to the people who are consuming that media. What rises to the top on social media is not what's most true or most useful. You already know this. It's what best serves the system underneath. And of course, talk radio is also editorial, but the difference is we are honest about it. We don't serve the system. We serve the audience. And when things go sideways, you see that difference show up real fast. And I think about where I was sitting a year ago yesterday when the terror attack happened on Bourbon Street. People did not need hot takes from social media influencers. They did not need to hear from Hassan Piker. They did not need to hear from libs of TikTok. They needed answers to questions like, what's happening? Am I safe? Am I okay? Are we in danger? What do we actually know right now? And in that moment, people turned on WWL expecting to hear voices that they knew and people they trusted. And what they heard was information, good, clean, clear-cut information being confirmed and corrected and updated in real time. They heard uncertainty being acknowledged instead of just filled in with speculation. If we don't know about something, we say we don't know about something. We don't try to guess just to give you a fast answer. In that moment, there was no algorithm in the background deciding which version of this news story was going to travel the furthest. There was no clout chasing. There was no clickbait. There was just live local radio doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And it's the same thing that we do during hurricanes, when a forecast changes at the last minute, when there's a tornado or a sudden thunderstorm or a flood, the power goes out, cell phone service gets spotty, and rumors start to outrun facts. And in those moments, it becomes clear that the radio is so much more than just legacy media. Radio is critical infrastructure, which is why people here at WWL, people all over Odyssey, lobbied Congress earlier this year to make sure that every single car comes off the factory line with an AM radio in it, because it's that important. Also, radio has editors, it has anchors, it has producers, it has hosts, it has engineers, it has people whose judgment you can see and argue with if you want. If something goes wrong here, we do not get to blame an algorithm. Real people make decisions here, and they have to own that. And that is not a weakness. That is the whole point I'm trying to make. Radio is honest about what it is, and most of the time, it doesn't go viral. It's pure, and it's immediate, and you have to live with what you say. Often in the same city as the people who are hearing me right now. You might run into us at Rouse's or Jazz Fest. You might be stuck next to us at the Punishment Light at City Park and Canal Boulevard. Local radio still creates a shared experience. When something big happens here, you don't just scroll past it. You turn on the radio and you ask, okay, what's actually going on? And we are here to tell you that. And that's why WWL and radio generally is as relevant as ever. And none of this means that I'm like anti-internet or anti-social media. I read it. I use it. I pay attention to how these systems shape what we see and what we think. And I don't confuse being online with being heard. For me, what comes out of the box in your car, that's the thing. The broadcast is the thing. Everything else is derivative. It's an echo. It's secondary. Radio is one of the last real public squares that we have. Talk radio is one of the last real public squares that we have. And it's not a fake public square that is designed to extract value from you by colonizing your attention, by monetizing your attention, by your grief, your fear, your shame, your loneliness, and selling it back to you. That's not what we do here. So I don't know what the future holds for me in this regard, but I'm pretty happy just to come here and talk to you on the radio 4 minutes at a time than be constantly feeding you junk on TikTok and getting tens of thousands of followers doing so. Just some food for thought. We'll step away and get some business out of the way here. When we come back, we'll talk to Frankie in Metairie. Frankie, we'll talk to you right after the jump. Don't go anywhere. Got room to talk to you too. 504-260-1870. That's the Oaken Art Jewelers talk and text line. Get in touch. Don't touch that dial. Okay, in about 10 minutes, we'll hand it back over to Chris Miller and get our first look at afternoon traffic with Joe Cardosi. Is that right? What's he doing up here?
Yeah, he's doing traffic today.
Okay, Joe's doing traffic today. We'll talk to Joe in about 15 minutes. Let's tuck in Frankie in Metairie on the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line. Frankie, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, Ian. Basically, I was calling back to check back with y'all about this closed primary thing, and it just made the news again because the governor had some emergency thing that he did arbitrarily to reduce signatures and extend a time frame for the Supreme Court seat, justice seat, and I think the Bessie seat. Meanwhile, okay, 665,000 people, myself included, no party registration, that cannot qualify for the House of Representatives or the Senate. Right. This qualifying period is going to end February 15th. I cannot qualify myself and ran for the House last year. Right. 6780
hey,
votes.
Frankie, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I'm sure that I'm misunderstanding what you're telling me. Are you saying that if you are no party in Louisiana, you can't even get on the ballot if you want to run for something?
So, yeah, they changed the threshold to where only a Democrat or Republican's money is good. First off, they have a qualifying fee available, but it's only available for the House, Senate, the Supreme Court, and Bessie. Now, only Democrats or Republicans' money is good. My U.S. tender is no longer viable. And in addition to that, the only signatures for this bogus nominating petition signature thing, which takes you back to high school when you used to have to do a popularity contest and maybe it was cool to go around asking people for their wet mark signature.
Uh-huh.
But in the age of identity theft, try going up to a stranger. Try going up to your best friends and ask them to sign something on your behalf. And it'll take you back to a thing where, you know, there used to be a joke made where I'm not signing nothing without a lawyer present.
Wow.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah, I have to appeal to strangers. And I can only get signatures this year from people that aren't Republicans or Democrats. This is an arbitrary invasion of the Constitution that harkens back to Thomas Jefferson himself. I've been decrying this thing. This is the basis of my campaign. I've told people on the campaign trail, if it requires money, I don't want your job. Just a citizen knocking on doors, trying to wake people up to the fundamental principles we've been led astray from, right? To give the voice, to be a voice of reason, to let the good sense of the people be heard from again. That's the only reason I'm doing this.
Let me ask
but
you
I
this.
Can't get on the ballot.
Let me ask you this, Frankie, and I'm not asking you this because I'm really challenging you on it, but because I want to hear you articulate it. Why don't you just take a shortcut and say, okay, I'm a Republican or okay, I'm a Democrat, so that you can get to work?
Wow, man. You know, I still consider myself a Jeffersonian Republican, a real Republican. I ran on this twice. The second campaign against the incumbent, Ricky Temblant and Jennifer Van Braken for council at large, the Republican Party had blackballed me because I wouldn't sign an oath to endorse congressional term limits, which are a red herring. Going to disenfranchise the people even further.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So I've spent an hour talking to the GOP, and ever since then, they basically wouldn't invite me to any reindeer games. I got invited to no meetings. I couldn't even get a voters list that I paid for. So essentially, I didn't abandon the Republican Party. They left me. I can't align my – this act, what they've done, what both parties have done, and I'm about ready to file a federal lawsuit on this next week. I'm not sure exactly on the timing of it, but this is a conspired effort of both parties to eliminate even people within their own party. They jacked up the qualifying fees by 250%. They don't want any citizen candidates on a ballot, either of them. And I've appealed to the Democratic candidates across the field, from the woman who's declared, Lauren Jewett, to people across all of Louisiana to get a response. And basically, they don't care. They're acquiescent to it.
This is nuts. This is nuts to hear. And
I'm saying.
This is nuts. Can I ask you, you can either hang on or you can call me back in like 10 minutes. But I got to take a break here and then we'll do the news. You want to talk again in a little bit?
Yeah, man, let me call you back because I'm actually trying to make a little change and talk to people. So, yeah, okay. I'll call you back, man. Great. It is nuts. It's as nuts as you
can. That's nuts. Okay, Frankie and Metairie, we'll talk to you again after the jump. Illuminating stuff. I'll see what more I can learn while we're in the news here. If you're on hold, stay there. 504-260-1870. Be right back. All right. We're going to talk more to Frankie and Metairie after we get the news and some look at traffic here. At 325, I'm going to be talking to Henry Young about viral nicknames. I've been trying to get Urban South Brewing to help me getting people to call Paradise Park bars Parky, but they wouldn't do it. I mean, it's their business. I'm not upset about it. I get it. But, you know, I think it would be really cool to go up to a bar and say, hey, man, give me a Parky. And everybody knows exactly what that means. Or you say, hey, Coleman, man, I'm coming over. You need me to pick anything up? Oh, you need a 12 pack of Parkies? OK, man. You know?
Yeah, I know.
So maybe he can. Maybe Henry can give me some hot tips about how I can make Parkies. One of the guys I asked about this, I was trying to find someone to interview about this. He said, man, you can't make fetch happen. Stop trying to make fetch happen. Oh, my Lanta. Lots more to cover in the next hour. I got a couple other headlines I want to tell you about on WWL.com. And, of course, we're doing Fans in the Pro with Deuce and Haas today. We'll be talking about the final game on Sunday against the Falcons, and we'll be talking about the college football playoff. And then tonight at 6:30, we'll have the Pelicans and the Blazers on AM and FM. BRB.